The Gospel of John, chapter 19. We're going to pick up in verse 1 in just a moment. Of course, this chapter is connected in the context to chapter 18 and the trial of Jesus before Pontius Pilate. We'll go back to chapter 18 and begin reading at verse 38, where, of course, Pilate, having questioned and interrogated Jesus on this occasion, has come to the conclusion that Jesus is without fault. That is, he's committed no crime, he has done no wrongdoing, and he is not guilty. John 18 and verse 38, Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover," that is the Passover feast. "Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" Then they all cried again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. On this occasion, finding no fault with Jesus, no crime that he's committed, finding him not guilty, it seems to be Pilate's intent to release him. They had a custom during this particular period of time that the governor would grant amnesty to some criminal, usually someone who was against the state, you might say a political criminal. And so he gives them the opportunity to release Jesus on this occasion. He would be of such a criminal. He claims to be a king, and so he could release him. But of course, the people on this occasion, that is, the Jews, those who are antagonistic and hostile, those who make up the Sanhedrin Council, those who have brought Jesus before Pilate, want him crucified. And they want Pilate to release an individual by the name of Barabbas, who is a robber. That is, one who doesn't take by stealth, but one who takes by violence. We noted last Lord's Day morning that he was an insurrectionist, that he was in prison because of that, and either he or those who were with him had committed murder in the insurrection. But on this occasion, they want Barabbas released instead of Jesus. Chapter 19 in verse 1, Pilate, of course, recognizing and realizing that Jesus is an innocent man, not worthy of being put to death, seeks other ways by which he could release Jesus. So John 19, beginning in verse 1. "So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him." Now the scourging of Jesus on this occasion is for the purpose of releasing him. Evidently Pilate thinks that, well, if I scourge him and then bring him out before the people and show him to be their king in such a condition, then surely they'll let him go. "So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted or plaited or weaved a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe or outer garment or mantle or you might say a cape. They picture him and portray him as a king on this occasion. They twisted a crown of thorns." The crown, of course, under consideration, is the Stephanos. It was the victor's crown. But on this occasion, it represented a crown that a king would wear. And so they make him out to be a king because he claims to be a king. And so they put a crown on his head and they put on him a purple robe. In the other gospel accounts, we read that they actually hit him with a rod as well, because they had put a rod in his hand, that is a scepter. And it is a staff that a king would hold, and they took it out of his hand and then hit him over the head with it, as if the authority of the king was being wielded against himself. So all of this is simply to mock him as a king, and we'll see that mocking continue all the way to his crucifixion. So again, verse 19 and verse 1 and 2, "So Pilate took Jesus and scourged him and You're familiar with scourging during this particular period of time. Usually a whip implanted with bone or pieces of metal in order to rip the flesh from the body. If one could live through that, perhaps his death would be hastened upon the cross. And many believe that's why Jesus died so quickly on the cross, because of the beating and the scourging that he received. Verse 3, John 19, "Then they said, 'Hail, King of the Jews!'" So again, they're mocking him, the soldiers are. "And they struck him with their hands." Here they struck him with their hands. The idea is they slapped him in the face, which is a very insulting way to treat one, slapping him with the open hands in the face. "Hail, King of the Jews." Hail means joy to the king, you might say, or rejoicing to the king. So they treat him as a king because he claims to be a king. Verse 4, John 19. "Pilate then went out again and said to them," so now he parades Jesus out before these who have charged him, and he parades him out in this condition. One having been scourged now, he's dressed and appears as a king. But note on this occasion, verse 4, John 19, "Pilate then went out again and said to them, 'Behold, I'm bringing him out to you, that, so that, or in order that you may know that I find no fault in him.'" So again, Pilate says, "I find him not guilty." He's not guilty of a crime. There's no wrongdoing within him at all. "But yet, to seek to satisfy you, I've scourged him, I've beaten him," you might say, "to an inch of it his life, and I've mocked him." But this doesn't seem to affect the Sanhedrin council at all. Verse 5, John 19. "Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them," note what he said on this occasion, he says, "Behold the man." Now earlier he had asked, back in chapter 18, in regard to releasing him, "Do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" But this time he says, he just refers to him as the man. "Behold the man." Look at this man who claims to be a king. Look at the condition he's in. You see from him standing before you that he is no king. He is no king with any authority at all. Look what has happened to him. He has been mocked and mistreated, and we have scourged him. Verse 6, John 19, "Therefore, when the chief priest and officer saw him," this of course refers to those of the Sanhedrin council, "and they cried out saying, 'Crucify him, crucify him.' Pilate said to them, 'You take him and crucify him.'" Again, the third occasion, "for I find no fault in him." He's innocent. So each time Pilate has sought to release him, but they still want him crucified. "So you take him and crucify." Verse 7, John 19. "The Jews answered him, 'We have a law, according to our law, he ought to die, because he's made himself to be the Son of God.'" So here we have, you might say, the reason why they want him put to death. Remember earlier, they had given no reason or no charge when Pilate asked them what the accusation or charge was, back in chapter 18 and verse 29. Then Pilate went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" But they didn't specifically mention an accusation or a charge. Of course, he has made himself out to be a king, but here's the reason they want him put to death. The reason they say they want him put to death is because he's made himself out to be the Son of God. He's blasphemed God by doing that. According to the law of Moses in Leviticus 24 and 16, he was worthy of being put to death, and that's the law they have in mind. "We have a law, and according to our law," note this, "he ought to die." That word "ought" means he must die. According to our law, It's a necessity that he die. Now, according to that law, how was he supposed to die? He was supposed to be stoned to death, according to their law. But they don't want him stoned to death. They want him crucified. They want him humiliated. They want him hung on a tree. They want him to die because he made himself to be God. Back in John 5, we see this on a couple occasions where they sought to take his life because he had made himself out to be God. Chapter 5, John 5, let's see, John 5 and in verse 18, begin at verse 16, John 5 and verse 16. For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, My Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Thus he had blasphemed God. Being a man, he made himself out to be God. He was worthy of being put to death. Then John 10, the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verse 33. Began reading at verse 31. John 10 and verse 31. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, Many good works I have shown you from my Father. For which of those works do you stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, For a good work we do not stone you, but for blasphemy, and because you, being a man, make yourself God. So this is the reason they say they want him put to death, because he's violated their law. But they don't want him. They don't want him stoned to death. They want him crucified. Now, if they were such sticklers for the law, why wouldn't they take him and stone him? Well, they want him humiliated. Not only that, Jesus had prophesied of the way in which he was going to die. And since he had prophesied of the way in which he was going to die, it's going to come to pass. He said he was going to be lifted up. That is, he said he was going to be crucified. We noted that last week on three different occasions. He said how he was going to die. And it wouldn't be by stoning, it would be by crucifixion. And that has to take place in order for his words to be true. So John 19 again, verse 8. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, note this, he was the more afraid. Now, why was Pilate afraid? It's connected to what the Jews said on this occasion. Note this. We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid. When Pilate heard that Jesus had made himself the Son of God, Pilate became afraid. Now somebody suggest, why is that? Why would Pilate be afraid because this man made himself out to be the Son of God? That was true. Absolutely. Because the people during this particular period of time, the pagans, those who believed in gods, I'm talking about more than one, they believed that those gods came down from heaven in the form of man. They actually believed this, that men were gods. That's why many of the emperors of Rome could claim to be God, could claim to be deity, and people would go along with it, because that was their belief. We have an occasion of this in Acts 14, Acts chapter 14, and in verse 11, when on Paul and Barnabas' first evangelistic journey. Remember they went to the region of Galatia? And in one of the cities of the province of Galatia, Lystra, the people thought they were gods. Acts 14, and in verse, let's pick up at verse 8 for the context. And in Lystra, a certain man without strength in his feet was sitting, a cripple from his mother's womb, who had never walked. This man heard Paul speaking. Paul, observing him intently and seeing that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice, "Stand up straight on your feet," and he leaped and walked. Now when the people saw what Paul had done, they raised their voices, saying in the Lyconian language, "The gods have come down to us in the likeness of men." And Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. Then the priest of Zeus, whose temple was in the front of the city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates, intending to sacrifice with the multitude. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard this, they tore their clothes and ran in among the multitude, crying out and saying, "Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men with the same nature as you." So these people thought gods had actually come down from heaven in these men, Paul and Barnabas, on this occasion. And that's why Pilate was afraid on this occasion. John 19 and verse 8. When Pilate heard that saying, he was more afraid. He perhaps thought that it is possible that this man is the Son of God. Verse 9. Now, of course, Pilate doesn't think he's deity, the Son of God, because remember, he's a pagan. He's a pagan. He believes in more than one God. Verse 9, connected to verse 8, he was the more afraid and went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus. Now note what he said to Jesus. And what he says to Jesus is based upon his fear, him being afraid that he's perhaps indeed the Son of God. Verse 9, and he went again to the praetorium and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" Well, Jesus doesn't seem to answer because he gave him no answer. But Jesus does answer him. Doesn't answer him down into verse 11. Jump ahead with me. Jesus answered, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you," note this, "from above. Therefore, the one who has delivered me to you has the greater sin." You could have no power or authority at all against me unless it had been given to you from above. That is, from God. When the question was asked, "Where are you from?" The question implies, are you of this earth or are you from heaven? That's what Pilate was asking. Well, Jesus responds in verse 11, by saying, "I'm from above. I am the Son of God." From above means from God. Look with me. We've seen this in our study before. Look with me back over in chapter 3. Chapter 3 of the Gospel of John. We want to look at verse 3 and verse 7 in this connection. Remember, on this occasion in chapter 3, Nicodemus has come to Jesus, and Jesus is talking to him about entering the kingdom of heaven. In John 3 and in verse 3, Jesus answered and said to him, "Most assuredly I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." If you look at that passage very closely, born again, the word again there is the same word we have over here in John 19 and verse 11, from above. To be born again is to be born of God. It's to be born from above. Same thing in John 3 and in verse 7. In John chapter 3 and in verse 7. "Do not marvel that I said to you, you must be born again." Again is the same Greek word, from above. You must be born from above. You must be born of God is the idea. And so Pilate asked the question on this occasion, John 19 and verse 9, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Jesus didn't answer, "Well, I'm from above." But later on, Jesus does, in a sense, answer him and saying he's from above. And so, where is he from? But Jesus gave him no answer, John 19, 9, verse 10. Then Pilate said to him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power? And that word power means authority. Do you not know that I have authority to crucify you? And power, that is authority to release you? Of course, Pilate had the authority. Where did Pilate get the authority? Well, he got the authority from Caesar himself. Caesar gave him authority. He gave him the earthly authority to execute or to release. And of course, on this occasion, when Jesus doesn't answer Pilate, where are you from? Pilate takes that as questioning his authority when Jesus doesn't answer. Yes. He doesn't know it. The Jews do not know it, and Pilate doesn't know it. But, of course, Satan is using them, hopefully, to destroy Christ, destroy the church. But God is using them as well to bring about His will. And we see that who's in charge. Jesus is in charge on this occasion. But Pilate would say, in a sense, I dare you not speak to me. Do you not know that I have authority to put you to death or authority to release you? Verse 11, and Jesus answered, and this ought to tell our politicians today something. You could have no power, that is, you could have no authority at all against me or over me or concerning me or in respect to me unless it had been given to you from above, that is, from God. Where do politicians get their power? Where do they get their authority? Well, government is an institution of God. God gives them their authority. Man doesn't give them the authority. God does. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. The one. Now, who delivered Jesus to Pilate? He has the greater sin. That is, on this occasion, of course, Pilate is guilty of sin because he's taken an innocent man and he's treated him as though he's guilty. He's mocked him and scourged him, tried to release him, but he's not been able to because of the fear of instigating a riot among the Jews. So he's going to allow the Jews to put him to death. But who delivered him to Pilate? Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. We might think Judas, but Judas didn't deliver him to Pilate. The one under consideration must be the high priest, Caiaphas. Caiaphas, remember, had the authority as well, either to, as high priest, and being the one who was over the Sanhedrin council to release Jesus or send him to Pilate. But Caiaphas made the decision to send him to Pilate with a death sentence. And so the one under consideration must be the high priest that was over the Sanhedrin council, Caiaphas. Therefore, the one who has delivered me to you has a greater sin. Both of them's guilty of sin, mistreating an innocent man and fixing to put an innocent man to death. They're both guilty, but Caiaphas should have known better because he is a Jew and is over the Sanhedrin council and the high priest. Verse 12, from then on, literally from this or because of this, from then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. So Pilate sought to release him. He wanted to let him go, but he couldn't. If you let this man go, you're not Caesar's friend. The Caesar ruling and reigning at this time was Tiberius Caesar. And of course, any authority that Pontius Pilate had came from Tiberius Caesar. And if he was going to remain on good terms with Tiberius Caesar, he certainly cannot allow someone that claims to be a king continue to go about in public. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar, opposes Caesar, disobeys Caesar, because there was but one king, Caesar. And so you might say this caused him to be afraid as well, even though it doesn't mention it. Now later on in life, of course, Pilate is going to be deposed by Tiberius Caesar, taken out of his position. So he has, you might say, a reason to perhaps stay friends with Caesar. And when Pilate therefore heard that saying, verse 13, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. So he came out and sat down in the judgment seat. That is, he came out of the praetorium, out of the judgment hall, and sat down in the judgment seat, a place where the verdict would be carried out, whether the man is guilty or innocent. In a place that is called the pavement in the Greek, but in the Hebrew it's Gabbatha. The pavement was simply a stoned area where the judgment seat sat up on it. It's kind of a raised platform, you might say. And it was elevated like our places of judges are elevated in our courtrooms today, the judgment seat. So from here, the verdict would be given. Verse 14, John 19. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover, and about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, note what he said, behold your king. Pilate doesn't want to put this man to death. He has good reasons not to put him to death. And he throws this in the face of the Jews, behold your king. Your king. It was the preparation day of the Passover. Remember, we've defined the word Passover on several occasions. We know it's not the Passover day in which the lamb is killed and the Passover meal is eaten, because that took place on Thursday already. Remember, Jesus in the upper room with his disciples. What is today in verse 14? What is the day? If Jesus and the disciples were in the upper room on Thursday, remember they went out in the middle of the night, Jesus was arrested, and it was early morning when he was brought to Pilate. What day is it?
Friday.
It's Friday. And Friday is the day before the Sabbath. The Sabbath was their day of worship. But this Sabbath was also a Sabbath within the 7 days of the Passover feast of unleavened bread. And so what's under consideration here, now it was the preparation day. That it was the day before the Sabbath. Because there was always preparation made on Friday before the Sabbath. What kind of preparation would be made on Friday before the Sabbath? Preparation to get ready for the day of worship. People in our day and time ought to learn lessons from the Jews in regard to their worship. They made preparation the day before the day of worship. They made sure all things were ready so they could attend worship. Well, not only was it the day before the Sabbath, but it was during the feast of Passover. So that means during the feast of Passover, they couldn't have any leaven in their homes. Remember, they had to remove all the leaven from their homes. For the next 7 days, they would eat unleavened bread. There were preparations that has to be made. So that's what's under consideration here. It tells us what day that he is crucified. crucified on Friday. Now, it was the preparation day of the Passover, that is the Passover feast. And about, note this, about the sixth hour. Now, reckoning in Jewish time, what was the sixth hour? Does anyone know? Anyone know? Middle of the day. It was about noon. Now, remember, the times that are given for us, they're not specific, because people during this particular period of time, they didn't have a clock on the wall, and they didn't walk around with a watch on their arm. And so when they say it was about the sixth hour, it was sometime close to noon. But when we look at Mark's account, when does it say he was crucified? Does anyone know? The third hour of the morning for the Jews would have been 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's sometime, you might say, between 9 and noon when all of this is taking place. Not a specific time, but about the sixth hour. So he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" Note that he throws it in their face again. "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priest answered, these chief priests, plural, that is, members of the Sanhedrin council, "We have no king but Caesar." Now remember, in our study in the book of Revelation, we've been studying about the Jews, apostate Israel, engaging in spiritual idolatry. This is spiritual idolatry. They do have a king. Their king is God. They're married to God. They don't recognize God as their father, nor do they recognize him as their husband, nor do they recognize Christ as long-awaited Messiah. "We have no king but Caesar." Verse 16, "So he delivered him up to them to be crucified." That is, he turned them over to them. "So they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went out to a place called the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. So he, bearing his cross, went out." Now, I want you to note that little phrase, "went out." From where did they go out? They went out of the city of Jerusalem. That's where they went out. Go back to chapter 18 and verse 1 with me. In chapter 18 and verse 1, we talked about this little phrase, "went out." Chapter 18 and verse 1, "When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron." I said to you in chapter 18 and verse 1 that some take that he went out, that is, he went out of the building that they were in. I suggested to you, because it says he went out over the brook Kidron, that he went out of the city of Jerusalem, over the brook Kidron to the Mount of Olives. And I believe that's what's under consideration here. He went out. He went out of the city of Jerusalem to a place called the place of the skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. Now, chapter 13 and verse 12 in the book of Hebrews, we also learn that he suffered outside the gate, outside the city. So he wasn't crucified within the walled city of Jerusalem. No, he was taken outside the city to a very prominent place. We learn from the other gospel accounts that it must have been alongside a road, and it must have been in an elevated position where people could see him from a distance. And he was crucified. On this occasion, John calls the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. What does Golgotha mean? Well, place of a skull. So he gives the Jewish rendering, place of a skull, and he gives the Hebrew or Aramaic rendering, Golgotha. Now, it is in Luke's account, Luke 23 and in verse 33, where this place is called Calvary. But the word Calvary there is the word skull here. It's, you might say, a bad translation, but it was I guess, Latinized, I guess. Called Calvary by the Latins, I guess, or the Romans. But it simply means a skull, place of a skull. Now, there's been a lot of debate whether why it was called the place of the skull. Some says, well, it was in the shape of a skull. Others have said, well, there were a lot of skulls laying around from previous crucifixions. We really don't know why it was called the place of skull. We could only speculate. It may have been in the shape of a skull. We don't know. As a matter of fact, there's places around Jerusalem today where they say, well, this is where Jesus was crucified. But we really do not know the exact location where he was crucified. We can only speculate. And though they have places marked in the land of Israel today where he was crucified near the city of Jerusalem, we don't know. And it might be good that we don't know. Because what would man do? Well, they would set up a shrine there. They would worship the place as people worship the cross, the literal cross today. So perhaps that might be good that we do not know. It's called a place of a skull in Hebrew, Golgotha, where they crucified him, verse 18, crucified him and two others with him, one on either side and Jesus in the center. Now I suggested to you that some believe that those who were crucified with Jesus were those who had also been arrested with Barabbas, those who were involved in the insurrection, and they were guilty of murder, and so they're put to death with Jesus on this occasion. Whether they're the two people under consideration or not, we do not know. But note, again, in verse 18, there's more here in verse 18 than just meets the eye. And they crucified him. Two others with him, one on either side and Jesus in the center. Why was Jesus in the center and one put on the left and one put on the right? Any significance to that?
They were still mocking him as the king.
Yes, they are still mocking him as the king. The king is always in the center and those who minister to him are to his right and left. And so they're mocking him. He is the King of the Jews. Pilate, no doubt, ensures that all of this continues to take place. All right, we're out of time. Not a good place to stop, but it's as good as any. We'll have to pick up here at verse 19 in regard to what Pilate wrote and the discussion that was had in regard to what he wrote next Lord's Day morning. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much for your kind attention.